Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
My parents would take my brother and myself out of school for a week, feigning sickness, and we would go to Disneyland and all the theme parks in Southern California. And I remember looking forward to that every year, and it gave me a love for all things theme park and Disney and family. So
that's so great. And it wasn't a regular vacation? They would like lie to your school?
Well, I think we wouldn't do it the exact same week every year, or if they probably figured it out. But you know, when you're in the fourth or fifth grade, it's not the worst deal to get out of school for a week.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Push the Envelope. I'm the AV Club's editor-in-chief, Patrick Gomez, and today we welcome Tony winner and six-time Emmy winner, Neil Patrick Harris, who will answer our brand new set of 11 questions. But first, I'm joined by the AV Club's editorial coordinator, Gwen Einat, who is here to talk about something completely different, Neil Patrick Harris. Gwen, thanks so much for joining.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Of course, of course. So we'll get a little bit more into what 11 questions is for any listeners that are unfamiliar. But basically, this week stems from that interview that you had with him recently that we will be playing later. You couldn't resist asking him about something that was award show related, and it seemed like the perfect opportunity to talk about it on Push the Envelope. Tell us exactly what it is that you were just couldn't help but ask, even though it wasn't technically part of your 11 questions interview.
Well, and in full disclosure, I wasn't even thinking about Push the Envelope until afterward. But, you know, huge fan of Neil Patrick Harris. Loved him on How I Met Your Mother. I even told him in the interview that like Lemony Snicket was my all-time favorite group watch with my kids. We both have boy-girl twins. Like, we just had all the stuff. But my favorite Neil Patrick Harris moment, and I don't think it'll ever be topped, is when he hosted the 2013 Tonys, did a number called We're Going Bigger. And it's just the most amazing, you know, it's like 8 minutes maybe total of just like over the top music, stage, live extravaganza, all steered by him. He does costume changes. He does magic tricks. At one point, he jumps through a hoop and it's huge. You know, there's tons of performers, but he's steering the whole thing. And it's just the most impressive performance I've ever seen in my life. I watch it, you know, like Tom Holland with the Rihanna umbrella, like every time it shows up on YouTube, you just watch it. Like, I have to watch the Neil Patrick Harris, or now people, I've done this with my friends. Like, we're having those Zoom parties where everyone's like, here's my favorite video. Like, this is my go-to video to show people, because everybody's jaw is like usually on the floor. They're like, when he jumps through the hoop for Pippin, that's when you know he's like all in and he's going to take you to the end of the entertainment, you know, extreme and back. So I did. I just snuck it into the end. Like, by the way, like, you know, it was like 8 years ago, but what was that like? Like, and do people ask you that all the time? And it was interesting because he said it wasn't the hardest thing he's ever done. Maybe that was Hedwig, you know, dancing in 8-inch heels, but it's just that it was like the most, what did he say? Like, exhilarating, and just everything that had to work perfectly to have that perfect moment of entertainment. And if anybody is listening to this, you haven't seen it, I caution you to watch it as quickly as possible. And Patrick, you said it's a favorite of yours as well.
Yes, it totally is a favorite of mine. In fact, similarly, I always am showing people it on YouTube whenever the opportunity arises. There is a bar in Palm Springs, California, that does show tunes nights, and everyone goes and sings along. Just like, they play videos. And, you know, in the COVID era, we all miss going to that, you know, having long weekends out of Los Angeles and going to that. And I put together like a whole video playlist on YouTube, and a bunch of my friends and I all watched it, you know, via Zoom in the early days of the pandemic. And that was among one of the favorites there, because it really is. It's so, so, so impressive. And, you know, Gwen and I are going to break it down a little bit and talk about some of our favorite moments and the stories behind it. But to what Gwen was just saying, let's actually take a quick listen to what Neil Patrick Harris had to say about making this insane, almost 8 minute long number come to life.
Was that like the hardest thing you've ever done? That is like, I just keep watching it because it's so astounding.
It wasn't, thank you, it wasn't the hardest. It was certainly the most exhilarating. And I will say that I'm not sure how it all happened, because there were so many things that could have easily gone wrong. Magic tricks that didn't work in the dress rehearsal, freaks that were going to probably be a terrible mess if I didn't lift my leg high enough. Quick changes that could have gone wrong. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of... there was a lot at stake, but it's the Tonys and it's Broadway, and people do that kind of nonsense, or at least used to, 8 times a week.
So Gwen, knowing that he said what we just heard and knowing we were going to talk about this on Push the Envelope, I went and found an oral history that Entertainment Weekly did with Neil Patrick Harris and two of the executive producers in 2013 about this number. And I mean, it is true. It was down to the wire in terms of making sure everything was technically going to come off. Apparently, they only were able to rehearse it in full the day of the telecast and only did it like one or two times. And the only time it ever went perfectly was the live performance, which is impressive for many reasons that we're about to get into. But again, Gwen gave a good overview before, but just to run it down, this was the opening number of the 2013 Tony Awards. It was written in part by Lin-Manuel Miranda, who, of course, we all know from Hamilton, but this was in between In the Heights and Hamilton. He wrote it with Tom Kittening, who is probably most known for Next to Normal, but they actually worked on Bring It On, the musical, together, which is kind of how they came as a team to work on this at the Tonys. It was choreographed by Rob Ashford, and it's so impressive. You know, the video, if you watch it on YouTube, which we are going to put on avclub.com, so you can go there and find it as well. It is 7 minutes of just nonstop performing, and then a full minute of applause that doesn't really stop, as much as Neil Patrick Harris kind of just like calms the crowd down and is like, I have to start going again. And that minute of applause is just so well-deserved. It starts off with Neil Patrick Harris doing a kind of nod to Once, which was the big show the previous year. He stands up and he starts to do this little bit of like an Irish ditty about the fact that the Tony Awards were moving from a smaller theater into the Radio City Music Hall, which is where it had been for a long time. It had moved to a smaller theater for a couple years. And so that was kind of the nugget of the idea that Neil Patrick Harris had, as like the way in on like just like what the number would be this year.
I can break your heart with a work of art, and a song that's quiet and small. But we're back where we began it all. Radio City Music Hall.
And he had a lot of visions of where it could go from there. So it grows from this number that's inspired by Once, which is very singer-songwriting, into a much more traditional Broadway number, in which he talks about how just everything on Broadway gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And we've got nods to Kinky Boots and Motown and Pippin and Bring It On. Mike Tyson makes an appearance. We've got the young kids from Matilda and Annie and Christmas Story. These are all shows that were currently on, but we were even going to get more. Like they were just like wanting to go, as the song says, bigger and bigger and bigger. Gwen, I'm not sure if you're familiar with this, but at one point, Neil Patrick Harris was going to get the mayor of New York to be on a trapeze swing. There was going to be a Wicked element to it. They were going to get, they had an Elphaba line, but unfortunately they couldn't get the Wicked people involved. The rehearsal schedule for this was apparently insane, where they were teaching the little dance moments to the separate groups of people that were in different parts in like, you know, they'd have time to teach them for like 12 minutes and then they'd run it twice, once or twice, and then they were out the door. And then everyone just came on show day and knew how to do it. But that's Broadway for you. They really went through a lot of back and forth about almost including the naked guy who plays guitar in Times Square in his underwear. Or even as to quote Neil Patrick Harris, the weird not Elmo Elmo. They just really wanted for it to be just this enormous performance. To me, the most impressive part is the stamina that it must have taken to get through this. Gwen, I think, you know, we've spoken about this previous to sitting down here to record, just how impressive it is that he just keeps going.
And he doesn't even sound out of breath. I mean, he's running, you know, when he does the magic trick. So somehow he gets from stage to all the way to the back of the theater, bringing in all the newsies, and he's singing the whole time. And then he comes up on the stage. He wants his Tom Hooper close up.
Oh, yeah, because he gets a little snarky. He gets a little snarky a few times. But here's this moment that he takes a dig at the recent release of Les Mis.
Oh, check this out. Can I have my Tom Hooper Les Mis close up, please? See, on Broadway, we don't need extreme close-ups to prove we're singing live. We sing live 8 shows a week. Check it.
You know, and so he goes from running, asking for that close-up, probably catches his breath for a minute, and then goes into like this almost like rap of like just unfurling syllable after syllable. And you know that, I know they always do that thing like talking to the kid at home who's watching, and you could be up here on that stage someday. You know, it's funny because since this show, you know, and you and I, we watch all the awards shows, right? And you've seen other people like James Corden, I think, tried to do this for the Tonys like a couple years later. It was like, and again, reaching out to that kid at home. But I don't know, this one, 2013, like nobody really reaches out and grabs that kid like Neil Patrick Harris running his ass off and pulling all of Broadway onto stage for you at the same time. And then, yeah, climbing up the Tony Award and hanging there and
spinning it. That was so impressive. Talk about an impressive set piece.
And that's like the only time he gets to like, you know, have a breathe, and he's still like just hanging on to it. But yeah, the standing O is really, really fun to watch. And it's fun to see the people in the audience. Like, there's a shot of Deborah Messing at one point who's just like her jaw's on the floor. Like she's just watching all the Cinderellas run by her. Like it's just everybody in the theater must have just been besides themselves. And is it, I can't remember the name of the actor, the guy who played Mr. Spock, Zachary Quinto, has to come out and do the first award. And he's like, definition of bad act to follow, you know, like who could follow that?
I felt bad. Yeah, I mean, it's true. And to your point on the kind of rap section, which, you know, it's so many times that we're like, oh, and then there was a rap section. And most of the time that's like a groan. And there's just something, because he doesn't try to rap it, it really is just like a patter song moment. It's very clear that the Lin-Manuel Miranda influence is a part of that moment. If you didn't know that he was a participant in the creation of this song, you certainly would know in this section. But I have to agree, even rewatching it to discuss it today, it kind of got me, and I was only half paying attention to it because I've seen it hundreds of times, and it does. It just like the passion with which he kind of speaks to that kid at home is something that like I'm not ashamed to say, like it gets me almost every time that I see it.
At the end of the day, we are gathered together to honor the best and the brightest, and tomorrow the fashion police will report on your dress and who wore it the tightest. If you win, have the time of your life. Tell your manager, dad, and your mom thanks. Hi to your kids and your husband or wife, maybe just for the hell of it, Tom Hanks. Nothing is bigger and better than seeing a veteran get an ovation or seeing a brilliant beginner freak out on the win on their first nomination. There's a kid in the middle of nowhere who's sitting there living for Tony performances, singing and flipping along with the Pippins and Wickets and Kinkies, Matildas and Mormonses. So we might reassure that kid and do something to spur that kid, because I promise you, all of us up here tonight, we were that kid, and now we're big.
Oh, I choked up every time.
Oh, yeah. And I think it's because it's balanced with, you know, we've mentioned the dig at Les Mis. There's a dig at Alec Baldwin. He kind of gets a little saucy about Berry Gordy. You know, it's not so much of a dig, but he's listing off all the big nominees this year and you know, takes a dig at him.
That's off to Berry Gordy. He runs Motown like a boss. He dominates top 40 and he banged Diana Ross.
It ends with a joke about Kathy Lee Gifford.
Kathy Lee's a Broadway
only lyricist, so anything can happen.
You know, I think it's because it's balanced with those kind of snarky and really like funny moments that it takes you by surprise that he kind of gets sentimental there for a second. But this was the fourth and hopefully not final, but fourth time that Harris hosted the Tonys. He did it in 2009, 2011, 2012, and then this year in 2013. He won an Emmy every single time he did it. Of course, he also hosted the Primetime Emmy Awards in 2009 and 2013. So he did double duty both those years with Tony and Emmys. And he's hosted the Oscars in 2015, which was also a great show. But a fun fact, Dame Angela Lansbury is the only person to have hosted the Tony Awards more than Neil Patrick Harris. She has done it 5 times. So NPH has to get one more time under his belt to tie and then another to like take the crown. And I think if anyone is worthy of returning to that stage, it most certainly is him.
Yeah, just talking to him in the pandemic, you know, like, so everybody's been locked down, not doing much. And he's like, yeah, and I just saw him in this trailer for this new HBO Max show that's debuting this month called It's a Sin. That's a British series. And he's like, yeah, I've finished Matrix 4. It's coming out in December. And he did a movie with Nicolas Cage. And I was actually looking through his stuff and realizing that, like, he's one of the only people who's actually worked on 2 major motion pictures in the pandemic year. So it's really not surprising to me at all that he could host 2 major award shows in a year. He's just, you know, the hardest working man in the show business. Thing gets thrown around a lot, but it might actually be him. Like, he just seems to run on sheer adrenaline and a twin's dad, which as a twin parent, I can only imagine.
I mean, and on top of that, you know, the one of the reasons he's talking to press right now is because he's got this partnership with PayPal and Venmo and CVS.
Yeah, it was really fun to talk to him about that. The video is really funny. It's just Neil Patrick Harris trapped in CVS overnight, but talking about like all the new things that we're doing that, you know, may actually transfer past the pandemic, right? Like using your app on your phone to pay for things. And I mentioned that, like, you know, yeah, I mean, I'm wearing a mask. Like, I might do it next winter because I haven't had a cold in a year. And just here's what underlines the difference between me and Neil Patrick Harris. Neil Patrick Harris is like, yeah, I love wearing a mask because when I go to the store, nobody knows who I am. I'm like, yeah, that must be really great for you.
On top of everything he's got going on, he found time to answer our 11 questions, which if you are a listener of Push the Envelope, you are familiar with our AV Club franchise. It has run for years on the site, and we brought it to the podcast every so often. And the premise is basically that we ask, the way we put it is we ask interesting people 11 interesting questions, the same set of questions for the full year, but it is all new this year with a brand new set of questions. Gwen, why don't you tell us a little bit how that aspect of the interview went?
That was really fun because we have this whole new batch of questions. We ask our readers to submit questions that they'd like to see in 11 questions. And then we go through, you know, also with our staff for suggestions. And our assistant editor, Alex McLevy, was kind of the curator of all of them. And it turned out really well this year. So it was fun. Like, it's kind of a big deal to be kicking off the new 11 questions. Like, Neil Patrick Harris is such a great person to be the first one. And he was really fun about it. All of his answers were amazing. So I'm also glad that people were able to hear the audio because his description of putting together the table saw for his new woodworking hobby is hilarious.
Well, let's take a listen to that conversation.
Hey, Gwen.
Hey, Neil, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. It's such a thrill to talk to you. We have this series called 11 Questions where you get these questions, we curate them from our readers, and so excited you are kicking off our 2021 round. Nobody has answered these questions yet at all, so I'm super excited.
Oh, and, boy. And you got the same question to everyone?
Yeah, for the whole year. And so, but...
Okay. Oh, boy.
Yeah, no pressure.
No one can compare themselves. I can't compare myself to anybody. Let's go.
Okay, yeah. What is the best trip or outing you remember as a kid, and what made it great?
My parents would take my brother and myself out of school for a week, feigning sickness, and we would go to Disneyland and Knott's Berry Farm and all the theme parks in Southern California. And I remember looking forward to that every year, and it gave me a love for all things theme park and Disney and family. So I remember and love that a lot.
That's so great. And it wasn't a regular vacation? They would like lie to your school?
Well, I think we wouldn't do it the exact same week every year, or it's like probably 6 years in a row. But, you know, when you're in the fourth or fifth grade, it's not the worst deal to get out of school for a week. So I'm not quite sure what their excuses were every year, but it was nice because we didn't have to go during the summer months where it was crazy crowded. And so we were able to go on the off times. Mm. And I just love it over there.
Oh, that's awesome. What's something considered a basic part of your current career that you struggled to learn?
Wow, probably that rejection is consistent and has almost nothing to do with your own self-worth. The entertainment industry is, by design, asking lots of people to apply for a singular job. And so you're rejected uniformly. And to be honest, when you fail in life, this is what I'm learning as a parent, mm-hmm. at least trying to teach my kids. When you fail in life, you learn. We should work towards failure so that we can improve from it. Because if you don't do things wrong, you have no gauge of how to make them improved.
Nice. But you were a child actor. That must have been a hard lesson to learn as a kid.
Well, for sure. As a kid, you're wanting to be approved for everything, for your prowess, for your looks, for your status, for all of it. So yes, acting and waiting in hallways with like-minded kids holding 15 pages of dialogue, hoping that you won the golden ticket. Yes, it came with its own isms for sure.
Did you pick up any new skills, hobbies, or got into something you hadn't before quarantine?
Oh, I'm very into woodworking. I started washing. Okay, I didn't take shop class when I was in school. Mm. I was more of a home ec guy. And now I'm watching all these woodworking tutorials and following all these woodworking people on Instagram. Oh. And I want to start building my own things. Like, there's something beautiful about taking something that was born from the ground and using your actual hands to turn it into something that is reusable in a new form. So I bought a table saw, I put that together. I'm turning my our garage here into a proper woodworking workshop. I'm getting very into it. Nick Offerman is my hero at the moment.
What was your first project? Like, woodworking project?
My first project has been putting together the table saw, which took 3 days. And I think every single thing I could do wrong, I did. I would mm-hmm. screw it all together, the one part, and then I would forget to read it. It said, don't screw them tight. So then I'd try to screw the second part in, it wouldn't fit. And then I'd be frustrated, go back and read, oh, of course, we're supposed to not screw them all the way in tight. So I'd unscrew. It was just a disaster. And it's a table saw, so I was even more terrified that I was incorrectly turn the thing on. A blade would go flying into the body.
Exactly.
But I took my time. I'm learning patience. And there's a great guy named Steve Ramsey who does an online tutorial called Woodworking for Mere Mortals. And I've joined up his weekend woodworking warrior class. But it got really cold now, so I might have to wait for the beginning of spring. Yeah. I look out the window and it's pouring snow, so I'm not quite sure how much I want to make a shop table.
Yeah, there are limits.
Wait a month.
What restaurant do you not live near but make a point to hit every time you're in the right town?
Oh, well, that's easy for me. I'm from Albuquerque, New Mexico, and the Mexican food there is spectacular. Hash, New Mexico, it's famous for their green chilies. Mm. If you can track down Hash green chilies, buy them every season, freeze them and eat them often. There's a restaurant. It's right near the university called Frontier Restaurant. It's open 24 hours. It's a bit of a diner, and they have the a frontier burrito. It's ground beef, green chili, cheese, smothered with a fresh homemade flour tortilla, and it is heaven. It's probably it's what would be my final meal, I think.
Sounds amazing.
If I had to choose one. And I can't not eat there every time I go to Albuquerque, which has not been frequently this year.
Yeah. What futuristic technology that doesn't exist would you like to have?
Oh, I really want, what's his name? From Tesla. Tesla guy. Elon Musk. I really want Elon Musk to make those tubes, those underground tubes.
Oh, yeah.
Just from New York to LA in 30 minutes or something.
Mm-hmm.
I can go from New York City to London in 20 minutes, like I'm a deposit at a bank in one of those pneumatic tubes, just get shot from location to location. I'm really anxious for that to happen. That sounds like great fun.
Yeah, it sounds claustrophobic, but would be handy for sure. What famous person that you've met has lived up to or exceeded your impression of them?
We've become friends with Mariska Hargitay, and I was a fan of her work and had heard she was the nicest person, and now we're close family friends, and she is the funniest, nicest, most generous individual. I can't say enough about her and her husband, Peter. Their kids are divine, and we've become fast friends, and so anytime anyone can engage with Mariska and Peter, I highly recommend it.
How did you meet? Were you on SVU or something, or your paths just crossed?
No, I wasn't. We have kids that are similar in age, and we met, I think, in Puerto Rico at an event for that Jose Andres was doing, and their family was there, and our family was there, and our kids were all playing together. And their kids are so well-behaved and lovely. And Harper, our daughter, has become very tight with Amaya, their daughter. And when you get to, 9-10-year-old kids that enjoy each other's company in the middle of a pandemic, you become fast friends very quickly.
Yeah.
And so we are all part of the same bubble now. And I don't know. I think they're the loveliest. She works so hard. Peter works so hard. And they still manage to maintain such great family relations with each other and to do it with such wisdom and humor and grace. I think the world of it.
Nice. Oh, what's the worst job you've ever had?
I worked in Ruidoso, New Mexico, at a sandwich shop where I had to clean the viscous kind of outer layer of goo off of canned meat before it was sliced for making sandwiches.
Wow.
That was gnarly.
That is a terrible job. Oh, good one. I'm sorry, what was the name of the place?
I appreciate Fresh Turkey. The town was the Ruidoso, Ruidoso. That's really good.
Awesome. Okay. What fictional family would you like to belong to?
Ooh, good question. Good question. Okay, first I would think Swiss family, Robinson, because I could live in a tree. But I realize that might be kind of limiting. So I'm going to go Adam's family.
Ooh, interesting.
Because they loved puns, and they lived in a kind of haunted house and embraced mad diversity.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Awesome. What's the first piece of art or the earliest piece of media that like inspired you to go into your field? Do you remember?
Honestly, I probably go way back and say flip books steered me towards like Georges Méliès and the idea that you could take still images and put them together. Georges Méliès was an illusionist, so I was drawn to him by magic, but also then turned into a filmmaker. And I really remember being young and making my own flipbook images, and then seeing that can be turned into film images or photo images, I guess, is just one step away from film. And that really made me feel that making film was achievable, as opposed to just something that you watched from a screen from afar.
How old were you? Do you remember?
Making flip books, probably 7 or 8.
Wow. Who is the funniest person you know personally?
Would that I knew Ben Schwartz personally. I would like to say him, but alas, I don't. So I will say my husband, David Michael Burdka. He is so hilarious. He does funny voices, and he has just a dark sense of humor, and consistently makes me laugh and laugh.
Nice. That's a recipe for a nice, long, happy marriage.
He doesn't get to show off his funny very much. So hopefully that he's starting to act again in earnest. So hopefully he'll be able to show his comedy chops soon.
He was always great on How I Met Your Mother.
Agreed.
this is a question that this probably has already happened. If a deli named a sandwich after you, what would be on it? But I have to believe that somewhere on Broadway, there's a Neil Patrick Harris club sandwich or something.
Is there? If there is, I must have one. For my ego alone. Just to feed my ego. But I don't know. I would probably... Ooh, that's a good show. Now, see, you're asking me this and I have me at lunch. So this is a great question. I would say it would be roasted chicken, like a rotisserie chicken that's been peeled apart with fresh grated cheddar cheese, fresh hatch green chili on an English muffin, toasted English muffin with mayo and nacho cheese Doritos in the middle.
Wow.
To give it an extra crunch.
That would be unusual.
Call it the Neil Patrick Harris. Thank you. My God.
He's such a fun interview and so glad we got to share that with everyone, Gwen. Thanks for doing that and thanks for sharing it. And thanks for being here for this episode of Push the Envelope.
Oh my gosh. Thanks so much for having me. I could talk about that video all day, every day. I'm sure we'll talk about it again.
I'm sure we'll continue to talk about it offline. But that's going to do it for this episode of Push the Envelope. Please remember to rate and comment as well as subscribe. The powers of be at Apple and Spotify and elsewhere really do value those rates and comments even more than the subscribe button. So please, please, please take the time. Tell your friends about us. We are going to continue to be here every Thursday to give you tons more award show content, and we are heading into the thick of it, you all. After a long wait due to COVID delays, we are going to be getting Golden Globe nominations soon, followed by the Oscar shortlist. We've, of course, got the delayed Grammys and SAG Awards coming up, and then we'll head right into Oscars. So it's all about to come down the pipeline. Things are about to get ramped up here at Push the Envelope, but that's going to do it for today. Until next week, bye. This episode of the AV Club's Push the Envelope was brought to you by producer Michaela Heck and sound engineer Ryan Allen.